Marcia turn his back on love. "Oh, never, Mr. Culhane," she said. "It's up to each of us to do everything possible to encourage true love. And if by chance you have a brother, I would be glad to make his acquaintance."
"No brothers, I'm afraid, miss."
She made a sketch of a curtsy. "Campbell, Annie Campbell, I am lady's maid to Miss Caroline Maxwell. And I know all about you, Mr. Culhane, from that article in the newspaper when you rescued the fisherman. Miss Peake just arrived today. She does not know she is talking to a genuine hero."
In this one instance, he'd happily use his so-called heroism.
"Thank you, Miss Campbell."
Jack refocused on Caroline's governess.
"Now, Miss Peake, was there some reason in particular you wished to speak to me?"
"I was under the impression that your companion tonight was the young lady under my charge."
"You think Mr. Culhane was with Miss Maxwell?" Annie asked. "That's impossible, Miss Peake. Before I left for my evening off, she had me bring her a packet of headache powder and was in her room for the night. She said something about her mind spinning with knights and earls."
"Possibly true," Miss Peake said grudgingly.
"I have no reason to lie. If I did and lost my job, I'd land back home with my parents. That's reason enough for me to be honest. I love my mother and father, but..."
"That will be enough, Miss Campbell," Peake decreed. "I have no interest whatsoever in your familial circumstances. We are conversing solely because I believed I saw Miss Maxwell. But because Mr. Culhane is a gentleman..."
She trailed off, clearly expressing her skepticism.
"I shall take his word that his companion was a governess."
Jack had stretched the conversation as far as he could.
"That's generous of you, Miss Peake."
She nodded.
"And now I shall commence my evening constitutional as I had planned."
Annie heaved a sigh of relief when Miss Peake headed south.
"That was a close call. I think I'll be having a few more of those while working for Miss Maxwell."
Closer to one a night, Jack thought. And he was amused by the idea until an unsettling realization set in. Maybe he was a romantic, too. On Saturday morning, Caroline's mother used her fork to flick her breakfast about her plate, as though the food repelled her. Since Mrs. Longhorn's chef was among the very best, the airy cheese soufflé with accompanying fresh fruit was not the issue. Caroline glanced at Mrs. Longhorn to see if she might shed some light on Mama's mood, but Mama's friend was doing her best to make no eye contact. Amelia and Helen seemed oblivious to the rain cloud over the table, cheerily making short work of their breakfasts.
"We will be having a dinner party here at Villa Blanca on Tuesday," Mama said without showing any of her usual joy over a social event.
"A dinner party sounds quite nice," Caroline replied.
Politeness seemed a wise choice.
"Nice?" Mama asked. "There is nothing nice about the situation. Last night at the Royces' ball, I talked with the Carstairs, who will be hosting Lord Bremerton in just a matter of days. Bremerton has asked them to identify Newport's gems of young womanhood, and Loreen Carstairs finds Catherine Royce to be the perfect example. She plans to have a small gathering upon Bremerton's arrival to showcase Catherine. Needless to say, the Royces are jubilant."
Mama picked up her fork and stabbed a strawberry.
"I knew I should not have let you stay here last night, Caroline. I am sure that Emmett Royce is sitting down and fattening Catherine's dowry this morning."
"And I am sure Catherine will be very happy," Caroline said, engaging in some wishful thinking that this was to be the end of the Bremerton campaign.
"Catherine's happiness is not my objective," Mama said. "Yours is. In order to unwind this mess, I invited the Carstairs to a dinner party here on Tuesday night. They will meet you, and I expect you to show them that you are the correct choice for Lord Bremerton's wife."
"Of course," Caroline replied.
She had always been very clear on Mama's expectations, even if Mama still didn't grasp Caroline's concept of happiness.
"Mildred and I have withdrawn ourselves from all engagements between now and Tuesday," Mama said. "We will need the time to properly execute this event. While we are occupied, you three girls will follow your schedules with no deviation."
She shot a stern glance across the table to Caroline.
"Especially you."
Since Caroline had already altered her schedule to include an afternoon lecture at the Redwoods Library in Athenaeum regarding the early monarchs of the Kingdom of Hawaii, she was perfectly happy to comply.
"Yes, Mama," she replied.
Fine, then, Mama said, before finally tucking into her souffle, which had begun its downward descent. After a few bites, she added, Eddie will be here for the dinner since your father will not leave the city until the Conqueror is finished with its engine work. Any other ship is too slow in your father's eyes, and since Mr. Longhorn remains in Paris, I will need at least one more single gentleman at the table. Mrs. Longhorn looked deflated at the mention of her husband. Apparently considering his family duty done, Charles Longhorn had left for Paris on a vacation soon after daughter Esme's wedding, almost 4 years ago. The vacation appeared to be of the permanent variety.
I am sure Eddie would appreciate Jack Colhane's presence, Helen suggested while giving Caroline an arch look.
That is out of the question, Mama said. Mrs. Longhorn perked up.
Agnes, is he not the one we heard this morning is conducting an affair with the Galette governess?
So Jack had decided to distract Dour Peak with a tale of love? Caroline did her best to hold back a laugh. Still, a choked sound escaped.
I am sorry if I shocked you, dear, Mrs. Longhorn said to her. That was blunt language in front of three young ladies, but it is the way of the world. One fancy French oiseau flits by, and a man is off to another nest.
Not all men, Mama said. Your father is quite exemplary, girls. All three sisters nodded in agreement. Papa was indeed faithful, unless one viewed his penchant for big game hunting as a substitute for a ladybird. But Mama tolerated tiger and zebra rugs far better than she would a mistress. Mama took a sip of her tea and then proclaimed,
Jack Colhane, however, is not showing himself to be an exemplary man.
Caroline wanted desperately to argue that statement, but knew she couldn't. The less she spoke of Jack, the better the chances of Mama warming to him, or at least ignoring him.
Mama, I have seen Miss Beatrice Galette's governess, and she doesn't seem the type to interest a young man such as Jack Colhane, Helen said.
Caroline wasn't certain why Helen would choose to be helpful, but she was happy that was the case.
What do you mean? Mama asked.
The governess is elderly, Helen said. I think she must be at least 40, much older than you.
Everyone at the table was aware that 40 had come and gone from Mama, and everyone, including Mama, knew that she turned as soft as butter with a little flattery.
Yes, well, Mama took another sip of tea before setting down her cup with a resigned sigh. I suppose if I don't make a place for him, Eddie will just tow him along and upset the numbers. Jack Colhane will do.
Caroline hid a smile. He would do perfectly.
Chapter 9. Tuesday evening, Jack exited the hired coach that had brought him from the harbor to Dawes Touro Square House. The old brick villa bordered on Bleak, and the sharply pointed wooden fence guarding it didn't help either. But to Jack's tired eyes, the place looked like paradise. He paid his driver and made his way to the front door. Wilton, one of the former owner's staff who Jack had kept on, greeted him once he'd stepped inside.
Good evening, sir. Your father is in residence, the elderly Butland Dorman valet announced. He is currently in the library.
Jack would have sooner believed that an impostor had wheedled his way into the house than that Daw would be in Newport during the work week. Either way, he headed toward the library. Wilton, who was remarkably spry given his bowed posture, followed Jack down the threadbare Persian runner that covered an equally scarred floor. The butler somehow reached past Jack to open the door. There, behind the heavy mahogany desk, was none other than Daw. He had a cigar in one hand and a tumbler of whiskey in the other. Jack looked away from the cigar. Cigars now reminded him of Heinrich Krantz, and Krantz was the reason he currently required a 2-hour bath and 10-hour sleep. It had been a hot, stinking 2 days spent shoveling manure, but Jack wasn't about to back down.
Hello, Daw. Having trouble finding something to read? Jack asked.
Unlike the last time Jack had been in this room, random piles of books now dotted the floor, and the shelves stood gap-toothed.
I was having more trouble finding you, his father replied. I came in before dawn Sunday, and not a soul in this house knew where you were. It's time you hired a personal secretary, or better yet, a minder.
His brows rose as he looked more closely at Jack.
I'm thinking you could use one.
Jack sat opposite Da in a deep leather chair.
No doubt. So why are you unshelving the books?
Curiosity, he said.
Harry Benton has no love for books, and he has even less love for banks. I'm looking to see if there's money hidden, because sure as I'm breathing, Benton didn't buy these to read.
Any luck? Jack asked.
Not yet,
Da replied.
And as long as we're asking questions, would you like to tell me why you reek of dung?
Jack had cleaned up the best he could before boarding the late afternoon Newport-bound steamer, but he was numb to the scent of manure.
I spent the past 2 days mucking out stalls, he said.
Da tipped back his head and laughed.
That's a fine one. Did you lose a bet?
No, I'm buying another brewery.
You have a strange way of going about business, son.
Jack smiled.
I suppose I do.
Da nudged his whiskey glass in Jack's direction.
Drink up. You need it more than I do.
Jack shrugged.
Hard work never killed a man.
True enough, his father said.
But that's not why you need it.
Taking Da at his word, Jack downed the rest of the whiskey. Its warmth as it made its way to his gut felt damn near life-giving.
So you're here for a reason, right?
He asked his father.
Aye, Da said. Curiosity again. I decided I wanted to see this place after all.
Jack shook his head.
You're gonna have to spin a better tale than that. You might care about money, but you don't care about houses. If you did, you wouldn't be trying to fob this one off on me.
As it turns out, you won't be needing it. Harriet Vandermeulen's father will be building you a grand place as part of her dowry.
In almost any other circumstance, Jack would have enjoyed his father's grin, but at the moment he was bone-tired, blistered of hands, and short on a sense of humor.
You're saying that Harriet's father came to talk to you?
Aye, Da replied. He's thinking you two would be a good match, and he wanted me to know that he'd be making it worth your while with houses both in the city and here.
He hesitated before adding,
You're well off enough on your own, but falling in love with a rich girl isn't a sin, you know.
Oh, fur, Jack said before trailing off.
He rubbed his forehead. A headache was setting in, but more of his father's whiskey would evict it. He'd just have to find which stack of books was hiding the bottle. Da drew in on his cigar, then exhaled the smoke in a long stream.
It's a rare thing seeing you without words.
What could he say that Da didn't already know? Jack was a grown man, and he couldn't be bought.
Where are you hiding the whiskey?
He asked.
Da laughed. A fine start on talk.
He pulled open a desk drawer, reached in, and drew out a bottle.
I'll bear up if there's no money from Benton, so long as I find another bottle or two of this left behind.
Jack stood, took the offered bottle, and poured himself another 2 fingers of Ireland's finest. He almost had the glass to his mouth when the library door groaned in protest as it swung open. Jack turned.
Mr. Edward Maxwell,
Wilton announced. Eddie stepped into the room. He was dressed for a formal dinner and looking distinctly unhappy about it. Jack could sympathize.
Where the hell have you been, Culhane? Eddie asked.
I'm assuming you're not speaking to me, boyo, Da said from his seat at the desk.
Oh, no, sir.
Eddie made a hasty bow and then came closer.
It's good to see you, Mr. Culhane. I was speaking to...
His mustache twitched.
What is that smell?
Me,
Jack replied.
And you're not dressed for dinner, either. Get cleaned up or we'll be late, Eddie said.
It wasn't that Jack was averse to the idea of cleanliness, but he didn't need Eddie to tell him what to do. Da was covering that job just fine.
Late for what? Jack asked. Dinner, in an hour and a half, with my mother and sisters at Villa Blanca.
I don't think so,
Jack said before taking a swallow of whiskey.
When my mother invites you to dine, you go, Eddie replied. Otherwise, she has a way of making the punishment for declining to attend painfully worse than the dinner itself.
Ah, but I wasn't invited.
Da began riffling through the papers on the desk.
Not so true, he said, holding up an opened envelope. 'Tis right here.
Jack blinked.
You opened my correspondence?
I said you're needing a personal secretary. If you had one of those, I wouldn't be reduced to digging through papers to find where you might be. Your father is a point, Eddie said. Where were you?
Working, Jack replied, and tonight I'm going to rest. I didn't respond to the invitation. Unless you did that too, Da, he added while throwing a wry look his father's way.
Of course I didn't, Da replied.
But I did, Eddie said. You're committed.
Jack sat.
I am unmoved.
He planned to stay home with whiskey, quiet, and the first food he'd eaten since last night.
Be a friend, Jack, Eddie said. They've got Caroline all primped up and are trotting her out to meet Lord Bremerton's hosts. Don't make me watch the Boring Show alone.
Caroline and Boring never happened at the same time. Eddie should have known that. And Jack should have known better than to be tempted by the idea of more time with Caroline. But he was. Jack swallowed the last of his whiskey and then rose.
Keep Doc company while he takes apart the library, he said to Eddie.
I'll be back downstairs soon. Caroline loved her mother. She loved her enough to wear heavy ice blue satin and what felt like pounds of pearls without a word of complaint. And on this hot and humid evening, that was a prodigious amount of love. Even the open doors from Villa Blanca's green seaside salon to the terrace beyond were providing little relief. A few miles offshore, angry clouds had gathered, and a gray wash of rain was meeting the sea. Thunder rumbled. Caroline, who had always terrified her mama with a love of storms, smiled at the thought of this one. Once it broke, the oppressive atmosphere would lighten.
Perfection, Mama declared as she gave Caroline one final inspection 5 minutes before the guests arrived.
Helen and Amelia had already passed muster and were whispering to each other on the far side of the room.
Wonderful. Now may I have a glass of water? Caroline asked.
She felt as though she were cooking under her corset.
Absolutely not, Mama replied. What if you spill and mark the satin? You must be flawless.
Alive and able to speak might be advisable, too, Caroline suggested.
Mama undoubtedly had been about to tell her to watch her words, but Mildred Longhorn entered the room. Caroline had never seen a dress quite the shade of reddish-purple that Mrs. Longhorn had chosen to wear. It reminded her of the grapes that grew wild along Rosemead's fence line. She hoped they hadn't fallen victims to the recent renovations.
Did you tell Caroline the news?
Mrs. Longhorn asked Mama.
What news? Caroline asked.
It had to be something amazing, for Mrs. Longhorn looked ready to spin in a giddy circle.
Oh, it's nothing at all, Mama said in a cheerful voice. Mrs. Longhorn is just pleased to have lobster salad on the menu when her chef had said there would be none.
Mrs. Longhorn laughed.
Lobster salad?
Caroline's mother shot her friend a quelling look.
Have another glass of champagne, Mildred. You seem overexcited.
Lobster salad was an odd passion, Caroline supposed, but she had heard of more peculiar. A servant bearing a tray of champagne coupes stepped forward to oblige Mrs. Longhorn. Caroline's mouth watered. She glanced her mother's way, but Mama shook her head no.
Do you think champagne does not spot? Her mother asked.
I think it was created by fairies and will leave only gold dust should it spill, Caroline replied.
Mama's friend took a sip of hers.
Indeed, and it is the drink of a celebration such as this, too.
Have more, Mildred, Mama said.
She sounded somewhat grim. Caroline, however, was feeling too sticky to puzzle out why. If she could have no champagne, she demanded air.
If you'll excuse me, she asked Mama and Mrs. Longhorn, but did not wait for an answer.
Caroline walked outside and braced her hands on the stone balustrade that marked the terrace's edge. She tried to draw in a deep breath, but that was not an option with her corset pulled almost an inch tighter than usual. Instead, she focused on the horizon. Lightning flashed from cloud to cloud, followed by a sharp split of thunder. A welcome breeze ruffled her hair. She wished she could escape from the dinner party, slip off her shoes and walk barefoot across Mrs. Longhorn's impossibly green lawn to greet the storm as it made shore. Of course, Jack would be waiting at the water's edge. He would carry her to a small rowboat. They would slip offshore to his sloop, which he had naturally named the Caroline.
He would show her the islands of the Caribbean before they explored South America. Once they had seen their fill, they'd round Tierra del Fuego and head on to the Pacific. She would chronicle their adventures, and finally the newspapers would print something about her other than the supposed cost of the beadwork on her ball gowns. Caroline sighed at her fantastical turn of mind. Of course, Jack had no sloop that she knew of, and he could hardly lift her in this blasted dress, let alone wade into the surf with her. But he'd be at dinner tonight, and that would do. It had to.
"Caroline," Mama called a few minutes later, "you must come inside."
Caroline stepped back into the salon just as the butler announced, "Lord Bremerton and Mr. and Mrs. William and Lorraine Carstairs." Caroline thought she'd misheard, but three people were indeed entering the room. She looked to her mother. Mama refused to meet her eyes. The twins gave her sad faces of apology, and Mrs. Longhorn appeared pleased enough that one might have thought she'd conjured the Englishman from thin air. Caroline approached the wine-bearing servant and accepted a glass. Her deep first swallow was decidedly unladylike, and her second just as large. Lobster salad, indeed.
"Lord Bremerton, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Villa Blanca," Mrs. Longhorn was saying.
"Thank you," the Englishman replied in a deep voice. "It was kind of you to add me to your party at the last minute."
Caroline felt compelled to admit to herself that he had a pleasant voice. If she were to be fair, she'd also have to admit that he might be a perfectly pleasant acquaintance, even if she had no desire to marry him. It was entirely possible, and to be hoped, that he would not wish to marry her, either. Fortified by champagne and positive thoughts, she hazarded a look his way. As it turned out, he was not unattractive. Her girlfriends would declare him sigh-worthy, even if she did not. He was tall, almost as tall as Jack, and certainly better dressed than she'd ever seen Jack. The Englishman's evening clothes fit with a precise elegance, as though he kept a tailor on call around the clock. But Caroline was fonder of Jack's more relaxed appearance. Bremerton's hair was a sandy color and cut in a longer style than American men currently favored. He was pale, almost as though he never even walked in the sun, and his eyes were a startlingly pale shade, too. From her current distance, she couldn't decide if they were blue or gray. His gaze settled on her. Caroline shivered. While a proper heiress was not supposed to admit to having hair on her arms, she could feel hers rising, and not with excitement either. She had always been a firm believer in instincts, and hers were sounding an alarm. Since running headlong into the downpour that had started would not sit well with her mother, she gave the Englishman a polite smile. He did not return it. Perhaps that was because he was too occupied taking inventory of her, right down to the pearls sewn onto her dress's bodice. Whatever his opinion was, he kept it well hidden. Thunder rumbled, but the storm had not yet broken in here. It would, though. Caroline quickly finished the last of her drink and accepted a replacement as Mama and Mrs. Longhorn said hello to Mr. and Mrs. Carstairs. Then Mama turned her attention to Lord Bremerton.
"Is there anything less formal than Lord Bremerton that we may call you?" she asked.
He stopped sizing up Caroline.
"You may call me sir," he said to her mother.
A brief silence fell, broken when the Carstairs began laughing. Mama and Mrs. Longhorn joined in, though they didn't look as though they had any idea what might be funny.
"Our guest has a deliciously dry sense of humor," Lorraine Carstairs said.
Bremerton did not smile.
"My given name is Marcus," he said, "but I prefer to be addressed as Bremerton when I'm among my friends."
Mama nodded happily, but Caroline had read his distant expression and heard his words for what they were. Other than the Carstairs, the Englishman did not count anyone in this room among his friends, nor did he look interested in changing that situation, which was just fine. Caroline had made up her mind, too. Bremerton would not be in her life at all.
"Did you really have to give the butler your full name?" Eddie asked Jack as they stood just outside Villa Blanca's dining room. "We're late as it is."
The only reason we're late is because you got caught up in the money search with my father, Jack pointed out.
It was pouring. No point in leaving your house until it let up, Eddie replied. And I now have a $200 finder's fee from your father. Not bad for an hour's work.
The money should have been Wilton's, who was going to have to put the library back in order now that the men had found the cash Da had suspected was there. Jack would make up for that in Wilton's next pay. Da, who could be tight-fisted, would not think of it.
Mr. Edward Maxwell and Mr. John William Anthony Patrick Xavier Culhane, the butler announced to the other guests who were readying to take their seats.
He got it out in one breath, Jack said to Eddie as they stepped into the room. Impressive. Better than most, Eddie replied.
They made their way to the long dining table, an over-fancy work of art that appeared to have been inlaid with alabaster and ebony. The south end of it had been laden with silver, crystal, and china for the small dinner party. Helen and Amelia, who hovered nervously near Bill and Loreen Carstairs, looked as though they wanted to disappear. Mildred Longhorn was as fidgety as usual, and Agnes Maxwell as commanding. But Caroline, she was breathtaking in a pale blue dress. Her dark hair was piled high, and around her throat was a pearl choker. Jack imagined himself removing it and tasting the skin beneath. Eddie nudged him forward. Jack tried to refocus, but looking away from Caroline was no easy task. She was as electric as the storm that had just passed overhead. At the moment, she was speaking to a man Jack didn't recognize. The gentleman's back was to him, or Jack would have warned him off. Caroline appeared ready to hurl a thunderbolt his way. Eddie and he moved on to greet Eddie's mother, who gave Jack the cross frown she seemed to save just for him. Mrs. Longhorn was far less annoyed by his presence.
"Come meet our guest of honor," she said, urging them in Caroline's direction. "If you don't mind my interrupting, sir," she said to the man with Caroline. "I would like to introduce you to Caroline's brother, Edward, and the Maxwell's family friend, Jack Culhane. Gentlemen, this is Lord Bremerton."
So the almost Duke had arrived. Jack kept his face empty of emotion, which was good work considering the sudden surge of something close to anger rising in him. He didn't like the feeling or understand where the hell it had come from, and he refused to let it show, especially in front of an Englishman who looked cool enough to have arrived in Newport packed in ice. Eddie held out his hand to shake Bremerton's, but the man inclined his head instead of accepting the handshake. Eddie's color rose.
"It's a pleasure to meet you," Jack said to the Englishman while keeping his hands at his sides.
"And you," Bremerton replied with an equal amount of insincerity. Caroline was going to have to stay close to a heat source if married to this man. It was that or freeze. Jack gave her a quick glance. Then again, maybe he didn't need to be concerned on her behalf. Her color was brighter than Eddie's. She held out her champagne glass to a passing servant. When he replaced it with a full one, she tossed back half of that in a swallow. Jack smiled. It might turn out to be a long dinner, but it would not be a dull one. He signaled for a drink of his own and waited for the show to begin. Perhaps a third glass of champagne so quickly had been excessive, Caroline thought, but a fuzzy sort of numbness had seemed a more diplomatic option than asking the Englishman to stop looking at her as though she were an unappetizing meal that he nonetheless planned to consume. She dared a glance at Jack as she took another sip of wine. He, too, was watching her, but amusement and even possibly some sympathy warmed his eyes. Small wonder she wanted him as much as she did, even though he didn't have a sloop waiting offshore. As Caroline thought of a means of escape, the knight marched forward. Royal blue-clad footmen entered the room single file and stood behind each of the massive dining chairs, waiting to move them for their occupants. Mrs. Longhorn told her guests where they would be sitting, though Caroline was sure all had read the seating cards, each of which rested on the back of a golden swan. The Englishman offered his arm to escort her to her place.
"May I?" he asked.
"Of course."
Her first step was a bit off, since all the champagne and no food made for a wobbly heiress. Bremerton pretended not to notice, but Caroline could almost hear the scratch of pen against paper as he marked this point against her. This, however, was not grounds for optimism. It would take a great many points to remove the allure of her great many dollars. Once everyone was at the table, Caroline noted Mama's careful control of the seating arrangements. Lord Bremerton had Amelia to his left. Given the way she stared fixedly at the silver charger plate in front of her, Mama had probably told her that she was not to speak so that Caroline could occupy the guest of honor's attention. Helen must have taken a vow of silence, too. She was seated across from the Englishman and gazed somewhere past his left shoulder. Eddie had engaged Mama and the Carstairs, who were raptly listening to a description of his newest polo pony. At the head of the table, Mrs. Longhorn had Jack occupied, asking him about his recent brave rescue at sea. Caroline was left nothing to do but talk to Bremerton.
"Lord Bremerton, have you been in America long?" she asked.
"Not very," he said, brushing at a lint speck on the edge of his shirt's white linen cuff.
She waited for him to elaborate, but he didn't seem to be inclined to do so.
"Other than Newport, where have you visited?"
"New York City," he replied in a clipped tone.
"And what did you think of the city?"
"It served its purposes."
All told, Caroline didn't want to know what those purposes might be.
"Are you fond of travel?" she ventured instead.
"Not particularly," he replied. "What could the rest of the world offer that England cannot?"
"An American heiress, apparently," she said,
done with trying for polite conversation. His mouth briefly bent in what could have been either his stingy version of a smile or a wince. He made no comment, though. Waiters appeared with the first course, roasted oysters and sherry cream sauce, a dish that was her least favorite. Caroline didn't pick up her fork. Jack hadn't picked up his either. Their eyes met. He gave a smiling shake of his head and mouthed two words, "chocolate cake." For the first time since meeting Bremerton, Caroline felt completely in control. When Bremerton was done with his oysters, he leaned closer to her and said,
"After the meal, perhaps we could take a stroll."
"I am sure Mrs. Longhorn has entertainment," Caroline said. "I doubt you'd want to miss it."
"And I am sure that they will forge on without us."
Caroline didn't need to look at her mother to know she was being watched. Mama's scrutiny made the air thick.
"A stroll would be lovely," Caroline said, and her mother dropped her gaze.
Control, it seemed, was as difficult to obtain as chocolate cake. The antique gilt ormolu clock on the dining room fireplace's mantel had just chimed 10:30 when Mrs. Longhorn suggested that the guests retire to Green Seaside Salon. She had arranged for a local theatrical group to perform selections from Gilbert and Sullivan's works.
"Are you certain you wouldn't prefer some light opera to a walk?" Caroline asked Bremerton.
She knew she would, for she was tired of being subjected to his dramatic silences. He had a way of imposing his will on the room while saying nothing at all, and the more her champagne had worn off, the glummer she'd felt. Only Jack had seemed unaffected by Bremerton's brooding ways.
"I find Savoy opera as unsatisfying as sugar," Bremerton said.
The Englishman had not touched his dessert, another reason Caroline found him suspect, but she was resigned to at least this small portion of her fate.
"Mrs. Longhorn, Lord Bremerton has asked to walk the grounds. I hope you don't mind if we do that rather than join you," she asked their hostess.
Mama's friend was, of course, thrilled to be incubating the match of the year.
"Riccardi, please be sure that the electric lights on the back of the house are lit," she instructed her butler,
who then murmured something to a footman. Once Bremerton and she were outside, stars twinkled overhead, and the sound of the surf meeting the shore filled the uncomfortable silence that the Englishman seemed to prefer.
"Shall we walk?" Caroline asked.
"I find the view from the terrace sufficient," he replied.
In the spirit of equality, Caroline decided to indulge in some of his silence. She would not speak unless he directly solicited comment. He stood silent while she gazed out past the flood of light on the lawn and into the darkness beyond.
I sense that you are not a woman who wishes for poetry and romance, Bremerton eventually said. She nodded, since it was true insofar as it pertained to him. She dearly loved some romance from Jack, though she couldn't imagine him spouting a sonnet.
We have that in common, then, Bremerton said. And you are also aware that I am here for a wife, correct?
Yes, she said, though it seems a long way to travel.
Virtually every time a debutante crosses the ocean, she has done so for the same reason, he replied. You did last season, though without success.
She turned to look directly at him. You know that I was in England?
I am a thorough man. I did not arrive unprepared. I even heard a tale about you giving a Wild West show complete with a six-shooter. Apparently you nearly missed hitting the Duke of Perryton.
Caroline felt compelled to defend her marksmanship. One shot went slightly astray, but it never endangered the Duke. He's skittish.
And he is no friend of the Prince of Wales, either. I hear His Royal Highness declared you an American original and sweetly dangerous after the incident.
Unfortunately, Caroline said. Bremerton nodded.
I understand your chagrin. Many find the Marlborough house set unseemly, but I find it is better to have no opinion at all.
I should be clearer with my comments, Caroline said. I don't care what the Prince's group thinks of me, or the Queen's more conservative friends, for that matter. My aim was and is to dissuade all gentlemen from courting me.
That is a naive and unattainable goal.
I succeeded last year, she pointed out.
He shrugged. You shot your way to a reprieve. You might not wish to marry, but you must do so to elevate your family's social stature.
Hardly, Caroline replied, trying not to let his slight sting. The Maxwells are now on their fourth generation in New York society.
Exactly my point. I shall be the 14th Duke of Ensley when my time arrives. Your family can benefit from my name.
And you can benefit from my dowry, she said flatly. Why else would you be here? Caroline was certain she saw a muscle twitch in Bremerton's narrow jaw. His eyes went a shade more toward steel.
You sound disappointed, he said. Perhaps you seek romance after all.
He placed his fingers beneath her chin and tipped her face upward. His skin was cold, and his touch made her uncomfortable. His posture was meant to intimidate her, but she did not step away. If she didn't possess courage at the moment, she could at least pretend to.
Lovely and definitely quite naive, he said before letting his hand drop.
Is it so wrong to wish for happiness? Caroline asked, still not allowing herself to take that step backward.
Romantic happiness is a peculiarly American desire.
Caroline doubted that, but she would not argue the point. Then I'm thankful that we Maxwells are American.
Do you believe your family would accept it if you fell in love with a fishmonger, or even with that rough-looking Irishman inside, the one with the absurd number of names for a commoner?
If Caroline began to doubt about her parents' wishes for her true happiness, she would be lost. Yes, they would accept it. She'd kept up a bold front, but knew he'd caught her hesitation.
If that's the thought that comforts you, most definitely cling to it, he said. But your reality will be what it is. You are the most suitable heiress for my needs, and I am the most suitable potential spouse for your family's wants. We both know that if I should ask for your hand, it will be given.
Caroline stepped back, but not in retreat. She squared her shoulders and ready to exercise another peculiarly American concept, freedom. She might not have it long, but she would have it in abundance while she did. Lord Bremerton, I believe I will finish this walk alone. Chapter 10. Agnes Maxwell was losing her composure in front of her guests. That didn't happen any more frequently than Halley's Comet came around, so Jack had paid attention to the event. He'd noted the way she'd frantically waved her fussy silken feather fan while the theatrical troupe had sung the finale from HMS Pinafore. The song's lyrics about joy and rapture didn't seem to have helped her outlook. The entertainment had since departed and talk was dying down, but her cheeks remained a fiery red. A truant daughter could do that to a mother.
It has been a lovely evening, but we must be on our way, Lorene Carstairs said to Mrs. Longhorn.
Perhaps just a moment longer, Agnes asked. I'm sure Caroline will be right back.
Jack knew better. When the almost Duke had come back inside and announced that Caroline wished for more air, Jack had known she was gone. He would have done the same.
We're sorry to miss her, but this is Bremerton's first night in Newport. We must have him well rested for a victory on the polo field tomorrow, Lorene said. He'll be playing with William's team while he is here.
Of course, Mildred said, while Agnes fanned herself again. This is not like Caroline at all, Agnes said to the guest of honor as he donned his hat. Jack wanted to laugh. This was exactly like her. The Englishman and his hosts departed. The twins then scurried out of the room after them like forest creatures fleeing a fire. It was a wise choice, considering their mother's mood. Jack stood to leave, but Eddie held out a hand, motioning for him to stay.
"Edward, you must go find your sister," Agnes ordered her son, who was busy filling two snifters with cognac. "Bring her here immediately."
"Don't worry, Mother. She'll return on her own. I'm sure she was just waiting for Lord Bremerton to leave," Eddie said in reassuring tones.
Agnes's color surged.
"I am not worried. I am upset. How could she do this to me? My nerves cannot take any more of this rebellion from her. Go find her and make her come inside at once."
"Care to help me?" Eddie said as he handed Jack a snifter.
"Wouldn't have it any other way," Jack said as he rose.
"Hurry along, then," Eddie's mother said. "I shall be in my room attempting to calm my heart. I am having horrible palpitations. Tell Caroline I will summon her when I am ready to speak to her."
She turned heel and left the room with a worried-looking Mildred Longhorn trailing behind her.
"Have a seat," Eddie said once the room was empty of drama. "We both know Caroline's out there lurking in the shrubbery, just as she did when she used to follow us around."
"She's probably improved her espionage tactics since then," Jack replied, as he took a chair opposite Eddie and relaxed.
A cool breeze rolled in off the ocean and through the open windows, smelling of salt and spent storm. All in all, the evening had proved more entertaining than sitting home with Da and a bottle of whiskey.
"So what did you think of the Englishman?" Eddie asked Jack.
Jack had no intention of sharing his true level of dislike. If he did, Eddie might believe that Jack had feelings for his sister. And while Jack did, they weren't the brotherly sort that gave him the right to opine on her future husband. They did, however, make Jack want to punch the Englishman. However, he'd keep that and his fists to himself.
"I've seen worse," Jack said.
"I'm going to give Bremerton the benefit of the doubt," Eddie said. "Maybe the standoffish behavior is because he's not accustomed to our ways."
"Maybe,"
Jack replied, sticking to his new policy of short, if not so honest, responses. Eddie shrugged.
"Or maybe not. But either way, there's no sense in angering my mother by objecting to the Englishman. I have no vote. Caroline is on her own when it comes to dealing with mother."
He took a swallow of his cognac and added,
"But my sister's resourceful. No matter how this turns out, she'll make a workable life of it."
"Of course," Jack said,
though the thought didn't sit as well with him as it had even a few weeks ago. The Longhorn butler entered and held out a small silver tray.
"Mr. Colhane, a message has arrived for you."
Jack stood and took the envelope. The script on the front was round and perfectly feminine, just what one would expect from a well-schooled heiress. He removed the note and read Caroline's request.
"Your sister is fine," he said to Eddie as he pocketed Caroline's message. "She's with a friend we have in common and has asked if I would bring her back to Villa Blanca."
It didn't escape Jack that Caroline could have asked her hostess to send her home in a carriage. The truth was, Caroline wanted to see him. Hell, she flat out wanted him, even though she had only a vague idea what that wanting entailed.
"A friend? What sort of friend?" Eddie asked, frowning.
For Caroline's sake, Jack wanted to make Flora sound staid, wealthy, and respectably aged, even though she was only one of the three.
"Mrs. Willoughby is recently widowed. She's renting the reefs for the season and met Caroline at the casino some days ago."
"That sounds harmless enough. You're fine with hauling her back here?"
"Of course."
"You're a good man," Eddie said, raising his snifter in a sketch of a toast.
Jack shook his head as he left Villa Blanca behind. He might be good, but he wasn't good enough to steer free of temptation when it summoned him. Caroline sipped a cup of India tea as she sat in the Reef's main salon. Being with Flora was both a literal and figurative step into the light. A small fire burned in the grate, and Flora had turned up all the gas fixtures so that the room, which was decorated in shades of gold and ruby, glowed. Flora, too, was colorful in her emerald-colored Empire-style satin dress, one better suited to playing the Empress Josephine on the stage than being used as at-home wear. All the same, Caroline envied her new friend and her lack of layers of petticoats.
"Are you sure I can't offer you something more substantial than tea? Some fruit, maybe?" Flora asked. "That was a long walk to make in such an elaborate gown."
Caroline returned the thin bone china cup to its matching ivory saucer and glanced down at her Worth dress. She'd taken care not to harm it during her escape, for it was very pretty. Unfortunately, now that it had been seen at dinner, Mama would never permit her to wear it again.
"The tea is perfect, and there's no need to fuss. You were kind to let me in after I arrived like a thief in the night," she said.
"Thieves generally aren't interested in the front door, and mine is always open to you," Flora said.
"Thank you," Caroline replied.
Flora took a sip of her tea. "A visit from a friend is just what I needed tonight, though I think this will be a short one. Jack will hurry you home now that you've let him know where you are. I believe he finds me a bad influence on you."
"And vice versa," Caroline replied.
Flora laughed. "True. Poor Jack is never going to quite grasp the bond among women. He's too..." She paused, considering her choice of words. "Well, he's just too male."
"Very," Caroline said.
"But despite Jack's opinion, I think we are excellent influences on each other," Flora said. "You bring life whenever you arrive, and I can give you a more, shall we say, mature woman's perspective on your situation, though I've already told you things from my life that would rattle Jack." When Caroline had arrived, she'd given Flora a brief summary of her night. Sensing Caroline didn't wish to say more, Flora had let the conversation move on to stories of the places she'd visited while working as an actress.
"Jack could do with some rattling," Caroline said, "and I envy you your freedom. I wish I had seen a tenth of what you have."
"Ah, but as you know, freedom always has a price. I'm not going to share my early years with you." She paused as though pushing aside the memories, and then gave Caroline a bright smile. "But I chose to move forward and make the best of this life."
"Choice." The word felt foreign to Caroline, and sweeter than chocolate, too. "I wish I had choice. Oh, I know I could refuse the marriage demand, walk from my father's house, and try to get by on my wits. But for all my education, I'm not very skilled. I doubt I could even get a job as a shop girl."
"I think that you are the sort who could do whatever she had to, but I'd never encourage you to make your way alone in the world unless it's your very last choice. I've been poor and I've been rich. Try to be rich."
Caroline smiled. "Very sound advice."
"So, now tell me a little about this Englishman your mother has selected for you," Flora said. "Are you sure your real objection isn't that your mother did the choosing?"
"I'm very sure," she replied. "He is not a pleasant man. He's so cold and stiff that he might as well be stuffed and displayed in my father's trophy room. And his touch..."
"I take it you're talking about Bremerton," Jack said as he entered the room unannounced, cutting short Caroline's thoughts.
She didn't even try to hide her joy at seeing him.
"None other."
"I hope you don't mind that I showed myself in," Jack said to Flora.
"Not at all," Flora replied. "Come join us. Would you like something to drink? There's a decanter of port on the far pedestal table."
"Thank you, but I'm afraid we're short on time," he said. "We need to be leaving."
He looked at Caroline again. His gaze held an intimate message. Her body responded to it, even as her mind, with its years of schooling and propriety, rebelled. Something had changed between them. She didn't know how or why, but it had. Caroline set down her teacup and saucer with a rattle.
Jack is right. I should be on my way home. Thank you for talking to me this evening, Flora, she said as she rose.
Smiling, Flora stood. I understand. That being the case, Caroline wished Flora would explain it all to her. Jack's carriage waited out front. He helped her in and then paused to say something to the coachman before joining her. Instead of taking the opposite seat, he joined her on the black leather bench and carelessly tossed his hat on the other. Though she wasn't in physical contact with him, she could feel the warmth rolling off him. It made her shiver in a most delicious way.
"So he touched you?"
Jack asked as they rolled down the drive to Bellevue Avenue.
"Who?"
The urge to hold and be held was so strong that she could scarcely keep track of her own name, let alone a conversation.
"Bremerton, he touched you?"
"Yes."
"How?"
"The usual way," she said impatiently, "with his hand."
Jack leaned back against the seat and exhaled slowly.
"I don't like it. I don't like the man touching you. And I don't like that I feel like this."
Though she'd never really paid attention to what impact she might have on a man, when it came to Jack, Caroline felt content in a very cat-with-the-cream sort of way that he cared enough to be territorial.
"I don't like the man touching me either," she said.
Now that they were on the avenue, streetlights glowed into the carriage as they passed them. The coachman was taking a leisurely pace, and the carriage swayed ever so slightly in time to the clip-clop of the horse's hooves.
"How did he touch you?"
Jack asked.
"Just his fingers beneath my chin."
The recollection rekindled her anger. "He held me there and scrutinized me as though he owned me. He said I'm a naive child."
"Then he's a fool," Jack said, "and he sure as hell doesn't know how to touch you."
Jack had never before used rough language in front of her. Etiquette dictated that she should be offended, but she wasn't. He drew her closer.
"A man who knows you would touch you like this."
As Bremerton had done, he placed his fingers beneath her chin and tipped her face upward. But Jack's touch was warm and vital. She looked into his face. Even in the scant light, she could read his intent, and it matched her desire. Jack's mouth settled against hers, and all thoughts of the Englishman evaporated. There was nothing but Jack. She opened to him, inviting him to kiss her more deeply. He did, and her heartbeat picked up. But far before Caroline was ready, Jack eased out of the kiss.
"And a man who wants you would do this," he said.
He angled on the bench so that he nearly faced her. She felt his hands at the back of her neck. In a few deft moves, he opened the clasp to her pearl choker, slipped it off her, and pocketed it.
"He would steal my pearls?"
His laugh was enticing.
"No, he would taste your skin."
He braced one big hand on the bench's padded back so that she was captured. But Caroline didn't want to flee. He bent his head and kissed the curb where her neck met the top of her shoulder. She breathed her pleasure with a soft sigh. Then his mouth ventured upward, tasting the skin on her throat that he'd bared. She'd never felt anything so intensely thrilling. Her toes curled, and she gasped. He picked up his head.
"More?"
"All," she said.
He made a sound of amusement, or perhaps regret. Caroline didn't care which one, so long as he kissed her throat again. And he did. Slowly, one caress at a time, he ventured his way back to her mouth. He made a low, hungry sound and settled the palm of his free hand over her breast. Caroline knew she should be shocked, but she was more amused at the way he drew back and looked at the pearls and crystals his hand had encountered.
"I'd forgotten," he said, "a rich woman's armor."
Heiresses' mamas everywhere knew what they were doing, dressing their daughters like this.
"I'd prefer to be defenseless," she whispered.
Moving quickly, Jack scooped her up, swept his hat off the opposite bench, and settled her there. She was propped against the carriage's outer wall with her cloud of ice-blue skirts spilling toward the floor. She reached for him and bumped her head on the rectangular calling card box just beneath the window, but she didn't care. All she wanted was more Jack. He pulled down the window shades until little light entered. Caroline was more than willing to go by touch. He knelt on the carriage floor with his solid body holding her safely on the slippery leather seat.
"One day we'll have to find a comfortable place to kiss," he said, as he lightly ran two fingers over the contours of her lips, down her throat, and then traced the line of her collarbone.
Caroline let her eyes slip closed and didn't answer. Sight and speech were distractions when there was new pleasure to feel. His mouth took hers, and at the same time he placed his palm above her dress's square, low bodice. His warmth transferred to her, and his skin felt slightly rough. Strong hands, she thought, a true man's hands. She reached up to touch his face as he kissed her. His beginnings of a beard were rough and foreign to her, too, but she trusted him, body and soul. His fingers dipped down into the slight gap beneath dress, corset, and chemise. She relaxed to give him more room, but ample curves and tight lacings left little space. He kissed her again and let his hand slide over the fortress of clothing until it rested below her waist. His hand fisted in the heavy silk of her dress as their tongues touched. The carriage slowed and then lurched. Jack picked up his head.
"We're at Villa Blanca."
"Tell the coachman to go on," Caroline urged. But even as she spoke the words, she knew them for insanity. He knelt upright and drew in an almost weary breath.
"We can't."
She lay there staring into the darkness. Why, of the many off-kilter events she'd experienced tonight, did this one make her want to cry?
"Of course we can't," she said.
Jack's hands closed over hers. She took his offered help to get her feet beneath her, even if she was none too sure she could actually use them.
"I need a moment," she said, doing her best to put her coiffure back in order.
"Better now?" he asked after an interval.
She shook out her skirt.
"I'm as reassembled as I can get."
"I'm sorry," he said.
"For what?" she asked, thinking that if he said for kissing her, she would be tempted to clout him.
"That Villa Blanca was so close to Flora's," he replied, before giving her one last swift kiss.
Then he signaled for the coachman to come round and